The film crickets are intended for mature audiences. Any guests on the film crickets do not necessarily share the same opinions as the film crickets. It's time for the Film Crickets with Jay Fortier, Chris Martineau, and Melanie Howerton. On this week's episode, Chris uses his movie pass and picks a movie, though, that's within the guidelines of the show. Let's find out why, as Jay, Chris, and Melanie review the 1987 American comedy horror film, Evil Dead 2. Does it stand the test of time? Let's find out. Your Film Crickets are on now.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the Film Crickets. I am your host, Chris Martineau, joined with my co-host, Melanie Howerton. Say hello, Melanie.
Hello, Melanie.
Fantastic. I love it. Jason can't be here tonight, so we're running the show. We have no guests, so it's just the two of us talking about Evil Dead 2. You know, I don't often get shade in the intro. Let's tell us why he chose that. And you know, the text thread was like, hey, you should choose something that isn't in the time frame, but you guys asked, and the first thing out of my mouth was Evil Dead 2. Melanie, were you disappointed by that I chose something within the actual, like, the treatise of the show? Was that, or do you think I made the wrong choice?
No, I was wondering why you did, because I even texted you and I was like, you know, you could have just did this at any other time and had, you know, and not called it your, you know, your movie pick.
I know. I just, you know, it's been skipped by it, and that, yeah. You know, as we go through the show, no one's thought of Evil Dead 2, and it's yeah. Such a formative movie for me. And so when you guys said it, I immediately thought, I'm going to torture my co-host, and then we're going to do 2001: A Space Odyssey. And I feel as though I would be a lone wolf on that one, because 2001: A Space Odyssey, for those that haven't seen it, is a masterwork of cinema. But it is like going to an art museum. It is real boring, and you have to like really sit and pick it apart. Melanie, have you seen 2001? I don't know that you have.
I have not.
Okay, so it's, again, you can't just throw it on and go, I'm going to watch this. And yeah. Again, I'm not trying to sound like highfalutin, hoity-toity. It's super sci-fi, but it's not very interesting sci-fi. Uh-huh. So, again, you got to go. I used to hate that movie. Used to hate 2001. I don't understand what the big deal was. Then you watched Kubrick and like, I think there's more going on than this. But I thought it was too much to pull apart. So I went with a big sloppy cheeseburger that was Evil Dead 2.
Okay.
But we do have some things to talk about. So before we get into the intro, let's get into it. I know what my history is, but I don't know at all what your history is with Evil Dead 2. So Melanie, what's your experience with Evil Dead 2? And I'm going to do a follow up here.
Okay.
Have you seen Evil Dead 1? Have
yes.
you seen Army of Darkness? And what about any of the newer movies of the Evil Dead franchise? So hit it. What do you got?
All right. So I think that I've only seen this one time, because okay. I did remember a lot of parts. I remember the girlfriend kind of spinning around dancing with the pitching.
Yes.
I
yes.
remember the chainsaw. I remember a lot of the thing. I remember him saying groovy, you know. I remember a mm-hmm. lot of things that he did. And I remember the hand. But I kept getting it confused with Evil Dead 1, because I can't remember that one now. But I know
sure.
I've seen them both, and I was getting them kind of confused.
Sure.
And then I don't know if I've seen, what is it called, The Rise of Darkness or something? What was it called?
Army of Darkness.
Yes, I do not remember that one. And I saw the brand new Evil Dead, which has more like Scream comedy in it. So it's more like
okay.
more horror. It's more horror. Mm-hmm. But with slight little things here and there of some comedy.
Okay.
But mostly horror. Where this one I feel like is mostly comedy
mm-hmm.
with horror.
It's this movie is really, at every juncture, it is really making you question what you're looking at. Like,
yes.
is this a comedy? Is this a
yes.
horror movie? Like,
it
what the hell is this?
Literally, it did. It took me a minute to figure out. So yeah. I was watching it for a while and I'm like, and
what
I said to my mother, I go, okay, so this is supposed to be a comedy then, right?
Yeah, no.
And she goes, yes, it's a comedy. I'm like, okay.
But it's a comedy with serious horror elements, but then it undercuts its own horror with funny things, and it's basically a Three Stooges short.
Oh God, I have stuff on that. I basically said it is basically to me. Mm-hmm. Like, first of all, the Twilight Zone right away. I was like, this is giving me vibes of Twilight Zone.
Sure.
Second of all, I see some Tom and Jerry in here.
Sure. Third, oh, my God. Yes.
Yes. And then most of all, more than anything, this is Jim Carrey all the way. This is this is basically like Ace Ventura meets Twilight Zone in a horror movie.
And well, that's saying something for Bruce Campbell, because he has such a great
facial
face.
Expressions.
Yep, and he can really do anything with his face. So, all right, so let me get my history with Evil Dead 2. I saw Evil Dead 1 in formative years when VHS tapes were just coming to be. My sister and my brother pretty much exposed me to a lot of movies I probably shouldn't have seen, and I know I didn't make my way all the way through it. Evil Dead 1 is very low budget, super low budget, more than this, and it actually has like claymation in it for the special effects. Like, I don't mean, like, in this movie, in Evil Dead 2, you see, like, stop motion, a lot of, like, Ray Harryhausen, you know, when the witch's neck elongates, obviously, you know, that sort of thing. But we're talking straight claymation, like, Play-Doh, like, frame-by-frame animation. It was very, very low budget, and actually kind of gory, and very subversive, and not funny at all. There is a scene that they allude to in Evil Dead 2 where the Bobby Joe, I believe, gets accosted by tree limbs.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so, again, I'm talking about my history with this movie. In Evil Dead 1 is Evil Dead 2, by the way. It's not, 2 isn't a sequel. It's almost a reboot, but they didn't have the rights to the first movie, so they had to call it Evil Dead 2. But the bottom line is that there's, in that first one, one of the women literally gets dragged out into the forest and gets raped by a tree branch. Like, I don't mean like that's funny, but like the legs... The legs come apart and a tree branch goes in, and it's not okay
at all.
Oh, yeah, in Evil Dead 1. So he's really trying something to shock people. So Evil Dead 2 comes out. I knew it existed. I didn't see it. And my friend, and again, shout out to, part of this is I've been talking to my friend Brian, and Brian and I were tight, you know, middle school, high school, whatnot. And I used to sleep over his house a lot and vice versa. And we rented Evil Dead 2 maybe 25 times. Like literally go to the local drugstore/video store. Rent Evil Dead 2, like, and they would just, we'd walk in and go, oh, you're renting this again. Like, and this is, so eventually my grandmother would pirated it, and that way you could watch it forever and ever. But I've seen this movie so many times. We used to, in middle school, giggling, incessant, 8th and 7th grade, middle school giggling, just annoying boys laughing at stupid shit. And that's what Evil Dead 2 was to us. We would get in trouble at school a lot for reciting this movie and was laughing our balls off. And that's where that movie was. And then eventually I saw Evil Dead, Army of Darkness, which is basically Evil Dead 3. Mm-hmm. So if Evil Dead 2 ends with Ash in the past, it takes it right from there. And it's not a horror movie as much as it is a Ren fair. It's a Renaissance fair with deadites and dancing skeletons. It's bananas. You got to see Army of Darkness.
Oh my God, I just remembered a part from this, so I must have seen it.
Yep. It's free.
I do remember dancing skeletons in there. Did they have like any kind of like weapons in their hands or anything?
Yes, Vikings. At one point, little tiny Ashes tie down big Ash. It's bonkers.
Okay, and I remember that then.
Yeah, and he says, you know, he has to recite a spell, and said, you got to say the words exactly. He's like, I know, I'll remember it. And he goes, Klaatu, Nafram, just like that. So it's that arrogance that he ends Evil Dead 2 with. Anyway, so we saw that, and then we waited. Evil Dead came out, the reboot, which I thought was very good.
I
saw some of Ash versus the Evil Dead on Hulu. Didn't like it that much. I thought it was a little over the top. I never finished it, and then I want to see Evil Dead Rise. Look at that. Ash versus the... He's so good. He's so... Look at his face.
It's like, it's literally every single movie.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah, look at him.
I think it does, because my mother just ordered this, so I think it's got the new one on there, too. I don't know.
That's cool. I want to get Bruce Campbell's book, If Chins Could Kill. It's all about his history. I'm serious. It's all about his history and acting. He's done so many things, that guy. So, all right.
Really?
So that's our history, and that's our... I have more of a formative relationship with this, and you kind of revisited it soon. So let's get into Evil Dead 2.
I want to say one thing before you get into it.
Go for it. What is it?
I know you had just mentioned that it's not, it's more like a reboot and it's not a part two.
Yeah.
I've read so many things conflicting that everybody said, no, it's definitely part two. And when you were talking about the rights of it, I have some trivia on that, so I'll read you that
right
later on.
All right, and that's going to be tough because if I start to step on your trivia, let me know because I've listened to a podcast on this. It's like 3 hours long. I've read the Blu-ray commentary. I've watched the making of. I've watched. So again, I don't want to steal your thunder. Yeah, I'm not gonna.
Well, they wrote something about a timeline too. Like, I didn't write it all down because it was too much, but it was talking about, these are reasons why this proves that it's a sequel. These are reasons that it proves it's not a reboot. I'll just say it real quick. It says, the original screenplay called for footage from the original movie with a narrative recapping the previous story. However, Sam Raimi had never considered a sequel when he made the first film. Ash was supposed to die in the final shot. So after its success, he had sold the distribution rights to New Line Cinema for a low price. Fortunately, he did not include the rights to the storyline and the characters. But when he finally decided to do a second movie, he no longer had the rights to reuse the footage of the first film. Therefore, a simplified new introduction with relevance to the second story was filmed so that the sequence could stand on its own without the knowledge of the first film.
Okay, and that's absolutely, it is a little bit gray as to how it's a sequel. There's no doubt
about
it.
Yeah, because it's just so similar to me. I was getting them confused. Yeah.
And also, I mean, but there's so much goes on in this movie with Raimi just trying to get the movie done. Him and Dino De Laurentiis, like, the Rosebud Production Company doesn't exist.
I have some on that too.
It's cuckoo. All right, so let's get into it. So here we go. Evil Dead 2 came out in 1987, rated R. Came in an hour and 24 minutes. God bless Sam Raimi. He almost refused to make a movie over 90 minutes. He directed Darkman, and they said, it's a good movie. It was his first studio film. And they said, hey, we need a movie that's over 90 minutes. And he said, okay. And he like fought them on. He's like, really? I think movies should be about 80 minutes. And he said, no, we need 90 minutes. And if you look at the runtime of Darkman, it's 91 minutes.
Wow, that's so funny.
Yeah, he wants it tight. Anyway,
I've
seen
that movie 47,000 times because at one time I lived in an apartment. I think I told you that. I didn't have any movies.
Yeah.
And I had no cable. I had to keep watching the same VHS tapes over and over again. And one of them was Darkman.
Oh, my God. Liam Neeson. All right. So Evil Dead 2, again, rated R. One sentence. The lone survivor of an onslaught of flesh-possessing spirits holds up in a cabin with a group of strangers while the demons continue their attack. Okay. Director is Sam Raimi, written by Sam Raimi and Scott Spiegel, starring Bruce Campbell, Sarah Berry, Dan Hicks, Cassie DePavia, Ted Raimi, his brother, it's Henrietta, and Richard Dohmeyer. A couple of things I want to mention about that. Richard Dohmeyer never went into acting, but he ended up on the Home Shopping Network. And the archaeologist in this movie ended up at like One Life to Live for like 25 years. And then everybody else kind of like disappeared except for Bruce Campbell. So
the archaeologist was the woman, right?
Yes.
They had the papers.
Yes.
Okay.
In the very convenient glass box.
Yes.
Because everybody walks around with a glass box of papers. Yes.
And the thing is that my mother goes, why they have to break the glass? Why can't they just open the box?
It had hinges. Yeah. No doubt about it.
One thing I want to say is that woman, you've seen Friday the 13th part 7, right?
Yes.
Okay. I do have this is a picture. This is just showing one thing of it. My mom printed this out. Mm-hmm. As she's getting splashed by blood like this, but then later on has like Charlene blood on her. But anyway, I wanted to show you her outfit. And you can't really see her hair that much, but her hair is majorly feathered. And her little outfit, and if you picture like a little sweater wrapped around her shoulders, she literally looks and it reminds me of the same exact outfit that the mom from Friday the 13th Part 7 was wearing.
Yeah, sure.
It's like whoever had this, it looks like her. did she rip off her clothes or something? Like, you know, put it in this movie.
Except without like 50 gallons of blood being sprayed on her. Yeah. So let's look. We got to take something apart here. Is this movie a comedy or a horror movie? I mean, I know we kind of went into it, but we go into this film, and right out of the gate, we have things happening in 2 minutes. Literally, like they show up in a cabin. By the way, if you ever showed up to a strange cabin in the middle of the woods, wouldn't you just make yourself at home?
Well, did they go there on vacation? Because
no.
Okay, because I was like, why would they pick this rusty, dusty looking vacation cabin? That's what it looked like to me. I thought they ended up on vacation there.
I think they were driving around and he knows of the cabin.
Okay.
But I don't think he knows who lives there. I heard it's a little run down. I don't, but he doesn't know who the occupants are, because if he did, he wouldn't be surprised by, you know, a reel-to-reel tape machine ready to be played at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
And also, these people that live in this cabin, you know, we saw the scene in the kitchen. They don't really take care of their house. I mean, and they're eating a lot of beans. Like, yeah. Did you notice, like, every plate had, like fresh beans on it? How long is this has this cabin been abandoned for that there's just, like, beans? And animals haven't eaten all of the stuff in there. Kind of gross. Any thoughts on the cabin?
I just thought it looked like it was abandoned. And the other thing that I noticed, it was like, it looked like it was the size of two rooms. Because mm-hmm. from the front, and then when he first walked in, it looked like it was like a shoebox size. Mm-hmm. And when she was screaming in the other room, he had to think about it for like an hour.
Yep.
Didn't she run over? It was like literally like right there where mm-hmm. he could have saved her. But then later on, I told my mom, like, that place is so small, he could have just grabbed her in 2 seconds, but he had to take his time going in there. But then later on, when he's running through the cabin, mm-hmm. it's like 20 stories long.
Yep.
You know, I mean, like, so I shouldn't say stories, but,
yeah.
you know, 20,000 feet long. And, like, mm-hmm. you know, it was just like it was a never-ending thing. And, I'm, you know, the front of the cabin looks like it's 2 inches wide.
I know. It basically is the size of an outhouse with two windows and a front and a door.
Yeah.
But for some reason, it has a kitchen, a fruit cellar, a large living room, a couple of bedrooms,
yeah. Yeah.
and a crawl space that goes around the periphery of the house, which to me is just fantastic, because when he's running through that house and he keeps looking behind him like, ah,
yeah, yeah.
Ah, like he's just running around. But again,
like
this,
Carrey.
Yeah, absolutely has that facial expression.
Yeah.
But it starts like right out of the gate. Think about the first like 5 minutes of this movie. They show up at the cabin. She's dancing around. He plays the tape, opens a flesh-bound textbook with
a
weird,
face on it.
With a face on it, right?
Yeah.
And his girlfriend gets like torn out of the
window or something.
The window.
Yeah.
She's possessed. She grabs his head, slams it against the wall a couple of times. He decapitates his girlfriend. He buries her.
Yeah.
Passes out. Wakes up. Gets put in the weird reverse shot spinning around like torture device, slams
yeah.
into a puddle, gets possessed for 3 minutes, passes out, then it's nighttime, then the bridge is out. This is all in like the first 5 minutes.
Okay, and aren't I have two things to say about that. Oh no, you go ahead first.
No, so what? Go ahead, go ahead.
As far as okay, first let me talk about the bridge. Two things. Okay. Let me remind me the bridge. The other thing is that lady, we noticed that she was possessed, but he killed her and decapitated her.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone that got possessed in there seemed to recover.
Yep.
So did he need to kill her and chop off her head? Because she probably would have been fine if he didn't do that.
Well, good point. We don't know that. And why are we letting Ash get possessed for 3 minutes? And then
yeah.
he's a hero for about a half. Well, I can't say half an hour.
Yeah.
Movie's a half an hour long. 20 minutes just for him to get repossessed later.
Yeah.
But then not get possessed after that.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. What Raimi is doing is saying, you are in, I'm going to throw everything at you and the kitchen sink and the plumbing mm-hmm. underneath it. And you're going to absorb all of it. And because you're in for this comic book ride of sensory overload. There's
yeah.
so many things being thrown at you so quickly, which is why I think this movie is, yes, it's low budget. And yes, it's a stupid horror movie, A Cabin in the Woods. But I also think it's a genius piece of filmmaking of keeping the audience on an absolute ride.
Oh, yeah.
Through the entire thing, either because it's comedy or because
yeah.
you don't know what you're going to get next. You can't
well,
trust.
You can't look away. You'll miss something.
Exactly. You can't yeah. trust the director that you're going to be safe.
Yeah.
Like, you can't predict what's going to happen, but it's not like it's so well done. There are plenty of movies that you and I have seen
yeah.
that you can't predict what's going to happen and it sucks.
Yeah.
This one is like, I can't wait to see what happens next because I literally don't know. Is it going to be a Three Stooges episode?
Yeah.
Is it going to be lots of blood? Like, what is going to happen? So anyway, what about the bridge?
The bridge, okay. Okay, so he tries to get out of there and he sees the bridge. And he can't go anywhere because the bridge is all curled up and it's all ruined.
Mm-hmm.
But that bridge, when you saw it was like a pretty good structure, metal bridge, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
Is someone going to build a bridge that looks like that to only go to one dirt road and one shitty cabin in the woods?
Yep.
Like, no, that mm-hmm. would, that a bridge like that would be going to a town and mm-hmm. a bunch of other houses. So you're telling me that even though he wanted to get out of this house, there was nowhere else for him to go.
Right.
It was the bridge and that house, and that's the only thing that's over there. There's no town and other people's houses or anything else.
So somebody some crew managed to span the crevasse that is that mountain range or that cliff in order to build a bridge to go to one crappy canyon.
Exactly.
Yeah. I would say to that, and I can't say this is an original thought.
Yeah.
But it's low budget. They only have so much. Obviously, it's a fake looking bridge. It looks like a toy going across a bridge, and the back of it is a matte painting.
The background's orangey, like.
Oh yeah, it's absolute bullshit. It's a matte painting.
Twilight Zone.
Absolutely. So are we saying, is that the limitation of the budget, or is Sam Raimi telling us this is a comic book? None of this is real.
This is all
nonsense. Again, I'm not sticking up for the fact that they made this movie in the middle of North Carolina, in the middle of the summer, in 100-degree week.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and they built the thing in an old defunct high school. Sorry, I'll shut up the trivia. But it's like, I don't know. Like, to me, they could have had an establishing shot of another bridge.
Yeah.
You know, and not some cheap-looking bridge. So we are in fantasy land at this point. And then what are we going to see next? Okay. So there's that. Now let's talk Bruce Campbell. Melanie, is Bruce Campbell handsome?
I think he's handsome.
I think he's very handsome.
Yeah.
What about him as handsome?
Especially when, like, and they mentioned it and some other thing, like, because I guess he was, like, training because he was so physical. And then when they ripped his shirt, you could see all his muscles and stuff. So, yeah, no, I think he's a good-looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I even remember, like, too, like, he's better looking than Jim Carrey, obviously, but I remember when Jim Carrey's not making his crazy faces, like when he was younger, he's a really good looking guy too.
Sure.
It's just hard to take him seriously because his mouth is always stretched out and he's always making these weird, crazy faces. And that's what this guy's always doing. So it's kind of hard to look at them like that when they're so comical and they're like slapstick comedy. You know what I mean? Like,
sure. But they're having Bruce or Ash, they're having him, like, they've got him done up. He's got that chin. He's got a Captain America chin that Captain America doesn't have.
Yeah.
Like, and it's strong and he's tall and his hair is pretty much perfect all the time.
Yeah.
But not only that, but even when he rips his shirt, it's like jungle-esque. When he's finally cuts his face, they always like have a cut so it makes his jawline look even more square somehow. Yeah. And they will do, again, this man gets physically abused by everything. And he always, again, it's like you had the picture with the archaeologist. She got doused in blood, but then she's clean.
Yeah.
There's a scene where he shoots his own hand and blood trickles out of the wall. And then an absolute fire hose of blue blood comes out of the wall. And there he comes. It starts as pink.
Yeah.
It turns black.
Yeah.
And why? Well, I know why, but so they'll mess him up, but then he still looks great. And to me, look, Melanie, we know that the demons want to possess humans.
Yeah.
But do the demons...
They want a body.
They want a body, right? And they want Bruce Campbell's body. He got a nice body. No doubt about it. But here's the thing. I think that it almost seems like all the demons want to do is just mess with Bruce Campbell. It's just mess with Ash. They possess his hand. They spray blood in his face. There's the scene where everything gets animated in the fisheye lens, when the lamps start dancing.
By the way, folks,
there's a scene in
Tom and Jerry.
Yes, the lamps start dancing. And he goes, "Okay, I'm gonna be fine." And he sits in the chair, and that to me is the moment where you know where you're in trouble.
Yeah.
He's killed his girlfriend probably prematurely from what you said. Never realized that.
Yeah.
He's
to have killed her.
Yeah. He has flipped himself. He's smashed plates on his head. He's flipped himself over. He's stabbed his hand. Yeah. He does such good hand acting.
He does.
Absolutely. My wife was watching it with me. She's like, he's really like selling that his hand is possessed. Yeah. I'm like, I know.
Let me ask you a question. I've been dying to ask you. Was there a hand thing going on in the first one?
No.
Okay, because I don't know why. And okay, tell me what movie I'm thinking of. Because for some reason, The Evil Dead, I always thought was something to do with a hand and there was an eyeball in it.
No. The only thing that makes me think of the Stephen King book cover Night Shift.
Oh, okay.
It had a bandage and there was an eyeball
yes,
in the middle.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm thinking of.
Wow, good for
I
me.
I knew it had something to do with his hand.
Yeah.
But I just, I like, I had seen this so long ago, yeah. I was waiting for some eyeball or him to be looking through a hole in his hand sure. with his eye behind it. I don't remember. I got them confused.
The only gag in Evil Dead 1 that has a hand in it is that somebody stabs another person through the hand with a pencil. Okay. And it's really visceral and you can see it sticking out of the hand.
Okay.
But no, there's no like cutting hand possession and then cutting hand off with
okay.
with a chainsaw. So,
yeah, he was so funny. You know, that was all ad-libbed. I'm sure you know that.
What was ad-libbed?
I don't know if you even have that in my trivia. I probably do, so I'll probably say it again. But
okay.
The whole kitchen scene with his hand,
sure.
he ad-libbed that whole thing and they just left it in there.
So wait, was he told to flip himself over? Did he do it himself?
I don't know. When we go over the trivia again, I'll see if it's in here.
He legit flips himself over. That's not like he's physical. And again, he's smashing plates over himself with beans.
Yeah.
So we have, again, in the elements of that scene, we are, as an audience, which is why I always say, as I've gotten older, I realize how good the movie is. Because when you're in the eighth or seventh grade, you don't understand. You just think it's funny. And you go, God, this is so low budget. This is so good. It's funny. Like,
yeah.
that's what Brian and I used to goof on. Like, oh my God, this is so low budget. It's so bad that it's so funny. Like, they couldn't, yeah. we honestly thought they were trying to make a serious movie.
I did at first, and it
yeah.
was kind of, and then when I realized, I think, like, oh my God, and one of the funniest lines ever, he cuts his own hand off. Obviously, mm-hmm. that's going to be really bad for him. And he's like, who's laughing now?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's so funny.
Because his hand is laughing at him.
Yeah.
And let's not forget, now again, we have elements of comedy and horror.
Yeah.
It's gory. It's yeah, but here's the thing. There's no red blood in this movie. It's pink, it's green, it's black, it's blue, it's pink. It's
yeah,
not
it's
like
kind of
actual
like
yeah. yeah. So it's not real color, and that's how
right.
they were. I think they wanted to rate it worse than it was, and the MPAA said was like, well, it's too much red blood. So they said, fine, make it all blue. Whatever.
Yeah, and that has
make
to do
black.
With that Rosebud production thing,
yeah.
with the whole rating thing. Yeah.
But so you have in one scene, that's why it's so disorienting. In one scene, you have he flips himself over, knocks himself out. His hand is possessed. The hand sees a, is it the chainsaw?
I forgot. He was like reaching for something.
Yeah, he clamps his hand down and he drags himself forward.
It wasn't the chainsaw because I remember he went out and got that from the shed.
So, oh, no.
Was it a knife or something on the ground?
I forget what he's crawling towards.
But
I know that Bruce comes in or Ash comes in and stabs his hand. So you have this, you know, he's crawling forward the hand and then he wakes up. He stabs himself in the hand and then he chops his hand off with a chainsaw, which he starts with his mouth, which no.
That's right.
You cannot start a chainsaw with. For those of us who have started a lawnmower or a chainsaw, it never goes in the first pull anyway.
No.
But and that's
it's
a really
so hard.
Yeah,
so
I know.
Hard.
It's a really horrible scene to try to it that is actually terrifying that you have to do that. And then cut to duct taping his arm with a piece of felt.
Which basically just looks like this.
Yeah, it's so
it's
so
this and it's like
of course
as long as the other one.
Yep. You know? No, yeah. No, don't worry about that.
Like
yeah, no. Don't worry about that. It's fine. But you know, he goes through and then he puts the hand under a bucket, he puts a farewell to arms on top. Which is hysterical. Mm-hmm. And then he's doing something else and you see the bucket in the background in out of focus crawl away, mm-hmm. which is not terrifying but eerie. But then it becomes Tom and Jerry. The hand goes in a mouse hole. It gives him the finger.
Yeah.
Ash goes, ha! And then shoots it with a
shotgun.
Shooting
the walls. Yeah. That and was then, all. Immediately when that started happening, I wrote, and it's even a little bit of Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Except you get that finger. Ha!
Yeah.
And then oh my God, it's just so bananas.
It's crazy.
The whole thing's bananas. So,
yeah.
We're going through this movie and you know, we have to mention a couple of things. So let's talk about some, it's silly to say so because we already talked about how there are inconsistencies in the movie and Jay, who unfortunately couldn't be with us tonight, made sure that I mentioned this. So first of all, there are people covered in blood and then they're not covered in blood. All right,
yes.
That's the first thing. Second, the house is way bigger on the inside than it is on the outside.
Yeah.
Okay. There's that thing.
Yeah.
dawn and night happen within 3 minutes of each other, and the sun, the sun in this world sets in 2 seconds flat. If also, couple, let's see if we notice this. Jay said, so he cuts off his hand.
Then
there's the rearming scene where he puts the chainsaw back on his hand. He says, we're going to go get Henrietta in the fruit. By the way, the wife has been possessed by a demon. It's in the fruit cellar, and it's this horrible witch demon.
Which you can easily crawl out of. The space is this big. Anybody can crawl out of there. And it proves it later on when somebody was able to crawl in there. When they pull somebody in without even opening it. So that thing locked wasn't doing anything.
No, not at all. So a couple of things that I want to see if we notice. Jay said to me that when he goes back into the basement, the fruit cellar, to battle Henrietta with the chainsaw, his chainsaw is on his right hand.
I knew you were going to say that.
No, I didn't even realize this. He picks up a piece of paper with his right hand. When was that? I missed that.
Okay, so it actually happened a couple of times.
Okay.
And the part that he's talking about, I don't know if I put that in there or not.
Okay.
But I know, like, it had changed arms specifically on one time because the producer thought it looked better for him to walk a certain way.
Okay, all right.
And he wanted him to walk a certain way going in one direction, so he just switched the chainsaw to the other arm so that he could walk that way.
Well, that's dumb. Now, when I was, and again, I've mentioned this, and I want to see if you saw it, because I didn't see it. So I don't know if it's been edited, because I have the Blu-ray, the redo.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they fix stuff. Yeah. When my friend Brian and I saw this 25,000 times every Friday night or Saturday night for a good few months, we would watch this movie, and there's a scene, and he goes back in the basement to face Henrietta. It's very tense because we don't know where it is. And I know I saw this, and if Brian ever hears this, he's going to hopefully email or text me about this. We see someone in the background, like a production assistant, come up out of a crouch, look around, and then go back down. Like, oh, the scene's not over. Did you see that, or is...
I don't think I saw that, but when I was reading the trivia, and I didn't write everything that down, but that was, they said there was many scenes where you can see the production of the crew.
Okay. I know that you can see lights in the forest. You can see lights on a stand, like an actual, like you can see that the spotlights are up on a stand, like in the trees. What do you got on Ted Raimi, Sam's brother?
Okay. The zombified Henrietta was actually played by Sam Raimi's little brother, Ted Raimi. He was forced to wear an extremely heavy, full-bodied latex suit with an addition of eyes and lenses and fake teeth. He would quickly become overheated and sweat insanely in this suit.
Yep.
So much so that the special effects team would have to pour the liters of sweat out of his suit into styrofoam cups. And at the end of the shoot every day, they saved it apparently. And then there was a rumor that the effects team somehow used the collected sweat in a prank on Ted on his last day in the suit.
That is terrible.
That's so nasty.
But he has said
there was a heat wave, and I guess when they made the first one, it was like freezing to death, and this one was like way too hot.
Well, Sam chose the middle of nowhere, North Carolina. I think I heard that they shot The Color Purple near there.
I have that.
All right, so I'm sorry. I don't mean to step on
your
stuff.
No, you're good.
He did that, so like no one's going to... It's too much of a pain in the ass to drive out here. Like no one's gonna bother us if we do this little stupid movie.
Yeah.
Think if you were Ted. He's 20 years old. He does whatever his brother says. He has said that when you're 20, you have no regard for your own personal safety.
Yeah.
You don't mind working 18 hours a day in 100 degrees.
Yeah.
He wore contact lenses that he could not see out of in a latex suit, full latex bodysuit that they had to dump the sweat out of, which is disgusting. And did we notice that when Henrietta is spinning around in the ceiling, that the suit splits open at the ass?
No.
It's split wide open. You can see it, but there's no fixing it.
Because
they're a low
hilarious.
Budget and they were on schedules. They're like,
oh my God, now I want to go rewind it.
So yeah, it's there.
That's so funny.
But that to me is the charm of the movie. So again, let's bring up, because Jay's not here, Killer Clowns from Outer Space, which is terrible. edit that out. I know he is. So those clown suits, I don't think are really that scary. They look pretty fake. They're obviously latex.
Yeah.
And to me, that to me is, you know, the group is trying to make something out of nothing. Like there wasn't really much to that movie, I don't think. Again, it didn't do anything for me. Jay, you like what you like. That's fine. Like you like Clue. I'm sorry you're wrong about that. But They had a screening of that at Alamo. You could have seen it on the big screen again.
Really?
And you were supposed to bring like fake candlesticks and like fake revolvers to it, like a
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah, like a Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
But to me, Killer Clowns from Outer Space is low budget, hasn't have a lot of story, and it's just kind of supposed to be goofy fun, I guess. Mm-hmm. But to me, Evil Dead 2 is, because they left in the scene with the things split open, and because you could see the lights, and because you could see the guy get up, and because you could see that, you know, they switched the hand in the middle, but they kept making the movie. Like, these people, like, we are, it's so, to me, so honest and earnest what they're doing, they're trying to do, and they don't care how much it doesn't make sense. To me, they're like...
It reminds me of Ed Wood when you say stuff like that.
100%. That's very astute. Absolutely. It's
like when you could see walls move, you know, and they're like, that's not fine. That's right. Just keep
it. It's fine. Yeah, let's just keep going, because we're so earnest about this product that we're making. They believe in it. To me, the makers of Evil Dead 2 believe in that movie more than the makers of Killer Clowns from Outer Space. I could be wrong. That's just the vibe that I get. And good for, Ed Wood, 100%. Like, this is garbage, but it's our garbage, and we're going to make the best we can about it. So, all right.
Yeah.
So, look. So, you know, what else can we say about the movie? It's a thrill ride. You know, people get possessed and unpossessed and possessed and unpossessed, and things get animated, and demons come in, and people's hands get sawed off. We got to talk about Groovy.
I have that written down too, Groovy.
We got to talk about Groovy. So why do you think... Yeah, look at all the pictures. This is the best.
My mom printed these out.
And when he's punching the elongated neck Henrietta, like, it looks so ridiculous. Oh, and the eyeball pops out. What did you think of when you saw the eyeball pop out and go in her mouth?
I can't even remember that right now, to be honest with you. I really can't.
He kicks her. He gets Henrietta down. He stomps on her head. The eyeball pops out and goes in goes in Bobby Joe's mouth.
I kind of vaguely remember that. I don't know why. I might have looked down or something.
And it's basically a reverse shot. So they started with the eyeball in her mouth.
I do remember that, because I remember thinking she's going to be possessed now because of that.
Right.
I thought that, because now she's got a body part in her, so I thought she's going to be possessed. So I do remember that.
So it comes out, but it's obviously, it's just a reverse shot. It started with her in the mouth, and then a wire pulled it out, and she has had to act backwards.
Yeah.
That is straight up a Three Stooges thing. That's out of Three Stooges filmmaking, and Sam Raimi is a disciple of the Three Stooges.
Yeah.
He even calls people at extras, he calls them fake shemps, because it's just like a no-name character, so we call him shemp.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun. So.
My mom also printed this out too.
Oh my God, the vortex and the classic.
Because she was like, just like in Monster Squad.
It is like in Monster Squad.
It's like Monster Squad in the Twilight Zone or something, you know?
That car is in all of his movies.
Yeah,
even in Multiverse of Madness, the classic shows up. It's crazy. Yeah. We got to talk about Groovy, and then we want to talk about kind of getting to the end of the movie. When you hear Groovy, so Groovy is like the big catchphrase in this movie, right?
Yeah, it became his catchphrase, yeah.
It's a catchphrase. You're not expecting to hear, if you've never seen the movie, you don't expect the hero to say Groovy. Mm-hmm. Now, when you hear Groovy, and try to think back the first time you saw it, maybe, and then when you saw it now, like, what are you thinking when you hear him say Groovy?
Like, I don't know. It just totally again, makes you know that this is a comedy.
Okay.
It's also weird that he would say Groovy, because it's not like he's a 70s child. He could be a 70s child, but he's not now. It's not like a word that most people would say now. It just reminds me of the Brady Bunch or something.
Like, so groovy, but it's kind of almost like it's almost like a he's flexing a little bit, right? But he's not flexing the right way. It's a guy who thinks he's cool, but he's not cool, because you're using the wrong word here, sir. No one says groovy anymore.
Exactly.
Right? Also, who's the final girl in this movie?
He is.
Yeah, he's the final girl, 100%.
Yeah.
Slasher movies and Cabin in the Wood movies up to this point have a final girl. He's on... there's more pictures. She's wasted so much ink. Yeah, there you go.
I said the same thing. I was like, Mom, stop printing all these pictures out because there's so much. But I have to show him because I thought she was sweet to do it.
Yeah, and so I'm absolutely. Thank you. But my point is that they're breaking all the rules here.
Yeah.
We have a guy at the beginning who makes goofy faces. He's awkward with his girlfriend. You know, at least I'm a man, and you're a woman, at least the last time I checked. Like, that's so awkward. He's not acting bad there. He's acting awkward because he's awkward. And but when you get fucked around with by demons all night, eventually there's a point where you go, I've had enough. I've cut off my own hand, so on and so forth. So we have, he becomes the final girl. He is going into act three to kick ass, but he is actually just, now he's a superhero. He's cut off his hand. He's replaced it with a chainsaw to very loud Foley effects.
Yeah.
When he puts his arm in that chainsaw, it sounds like thunk, and then he puts the rifle in the back of the thing. And he saws off a shotgun with a chainsaw. I don't think chainsaws go through metal.
I thought the same thing. Yeah. I was like, man, I don't think that would work.
But then he hits it with his elbow, punk. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's so badass. He's had enough. So now at this point, it's not a horror movie. Yeah. It's a superhero movie.
Yeah.
He's the final girl, and he's finally got some confidence, but he's got the wrong confidence. He says groovy rather than like, let's go kick some ass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's setting it up. And when you watch Army of Darkness, they take that, his newfound braggadocio, his newfound confidence, but it's not good confidence.
That's what I heard. I heard like,
he's full of shit.
Like, yeah. Well, I heard that like, and it looks like he's going to be the hero because he killed that thing that was flying. Yeah. But then they say that when part three comes, he's not like, he's like tied down or something. And he's like a prisoner or something.
If,
like,
if anything, it's not.
Why would that happen though? If it started from before.
Because they went a different way with it. It's not a horror movie. It's a fantasy film set in medieval times. And if anything, and again, no disrespect to Jack Burton from Big Trouble in Little China, he's the one that taught us that you can have a hero that really doesn't know what he's doing and thinks he knows what he's doing, but he doesn't. And this is all, that's what Ash does in Army of Darkness.
Well, you he know, thinks, like that the end where he is in that part and like with that head that I showed you of that weird thing. That Henrietta. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of those old Sunday, was it Saturday or Sunday? Like we're talking about Creature Double Features.
Creature, that's Saturday. Saturday afternoon.
That reminded me, remember the Cyclops ones that were in like the medieval time areas? Like, there's like, like the Henrietta was like the Cyclops person. And then like in the medieval time, then he's in the, it just kind of reminded me of that too. There were so many things in this movie that reminded me of so many different other things.
And also they, you know, he defeats the demons, but he gets sucked into a wormhole.
Yeah.
And God damn it. Like,
he's like,
when you
no.
see the, when you see the stove coming in like it's on a wire, that's hysterical. And it goes through a Stargate, not unlike 2001, when eventually you sit down and watch 2001. There's a Stargate scene with like all the colors go by. But then you see him like go in a half circle with that stupid face. Go,
rah! Yeah, his face.
Oh, it's so, how do you not laugh at that? It's so funny, but it's so serious. He's being teleported to another time to fulfill his destiny as he that came from above. It's crazy. So anyway, all right, look, let's keep this to a tight hour. So let's get ready for TMI. I'm going to throw on the intro, and then we'll see what's going on.
It's time for TMI with Melanie.
Listen to this. I am in the bathroom right before the movie starts.
Uh-huh.
And I'm in the stall, and there's no toilet paper.
Yeah.
Mine are at home TMI. In a display case above
TMI,
my bed.
My TMI, my friends.
TMI? Too much information. I used to say don't go there, but that's lame.
Now, here's Melanie with your timeless movie info.
So Melanie's up with TMI, so let's hit it. What do you got for me, Melanie?
Okay, so we might have discussed some of these things. I don't know.
Sure we did.
All right, I'm sure we did. All right, the budget was $3.5 million. It grossed an unimpressive $807,000 due to its limited release in 310 theaters at the time. However, it says after only a month in theaters, it ultimately grossed $5.9 million worldwide.
Excellent.
All right, so Stephen King was such a huge fan of The Evil Dead 1981 that he convinced producer Dino, I can't say names for nothing.
De Laurentiis.
Thank you.
Yep.
Over dinner, who was producing King's Maximum Overdrive 1986 at the time, to have his production company, DEG, finance Evil Dead 2. So if it wasn't for Stephen King, we would not have Evil Dead 2. And we probably wouldn't have had any of the other ones either, because this had to, you had to go with this again, and then you had to keep going up. So thank you, Stephen King, or we wouldn't have had any of them. All right. After watching the final cut of the film, producer Dino, I see how I kept his last name out.
That's cool. No worries. Hey, Dino.
Yeah. Producer Dino knew for certain that the film would get an X rating from the MPAA due to high amount of violence and gore. However, Sammy Raimi argued if the film would be recut to secure an R rating, it would only be around an hour long. Since he wasn't allowed to release an unrated film, he ultimately decided to credit his production company under the name Rosebud Releasing Corporation, allowing him to not only submit the film to the MPAA and release the film without a rating. Which I don't understand that still, because like, how come he wasn't allowed to submit a film without a rating, but another corporation could? I don't get that.
I don't know how the inner workings of that happen. Okay. I couldn't tell you.
All right. So Bruce Campbell's favorite film of the entire trilogy. Bruce Campbell completely improvised the scene. I mentioned that, where he fights his possessed hand in the kitchen. Sammy Raimi praised his performance and used the first take for that film. So I thought it was kind of funny.
Oh, wow. One take? Wow.
Yeah,
all right.
Take. Yeah.
Well, I guess when you break that many dishes. Yep. Okay.
Large. They must have been laughing their asses off, though, when he was doing that.
I don't
that
see how they weren't.
Like, I mean, you know.
Yep.
All right. The large demonic head Ash battles in the climax of the film, which the crew nicknamed the Rotten Apple Head, was too large and cumbersome for the crew to carry back to California. So it was left in North Carolina and soon disappeared. Its whereabouts were unknown for a number of years until it was found in a Halloween haunted house attraction just outside the original shooting location of Wadsboro, North Carolina.
That's the best.
Yeah.
That's cool.
He was like,
all
this
right.
is cool. I'm taking this. That happened too recently when they were filming the new, whatchamacallit, Beetlejuice.
Okay.
They're all their sets when they left started going missing.
Huh. That's done filming?
Well, I know the part that was in Vermont was done filming because then actors went on strike.
Oh, all right.
And then the house got taken down and then stuff got stolen.
No, sure. Okay.
I don't know what happened over there. Let's see. The actors were completely blind when they had to wear the OPEG contact lenses that they were playing possessed versions of their characters. The only way that they knew how to see was basically just to try to move like blindly through tons of rehearsals. They couldn't see anything.
Okay. That's horrible. That's horrible.
And I did think the special effects makeup, I did want to say, when they were the possessed people, I thought those looked really good. Actually, even to this day, I still think they look pretty good.
Oh, yeah. That's KMB. That's the people that do. Yeah. That's Greg Nicotero and Howard Berger and all that stuff. Yep.
So that looked really good. Still does. Let's see. It was shot in the small town of North Carolina, Wadsboro, like we mentioned, which had been the filming location for The Color Purple in 85. The large white farmhouse from that movie actually served as the Evil Dead 2's production office, and the filming was done in the woods nearby, as well as in a nearby high school for interior shots. Ash Bruce Campbell drives the same 1973 Oldsmobile Delta 88 as in the original film. The car was owned by Sam Raimi at the time, originally bought by Raimi's father for the family when Sam was only 14. Isn't that cute?
Oh, adorable.
I know. The scene where Ash is doused in blood coming from the wall was filmed by placing him laying on the floor and then pouring gallons of fake blood on him and from above him, and filmed with the camera turned at a 90-degree angle to create the illusion that he was standing upright. So much blood was dumped on him that he said he felt like he was drowning. And he also produced red snot for the next 2 weeks every time he blew his nose.
That's disgusting.
To make matters worse, his insistence to keep the authentic Karo syrup formula was used to simulate the blood and made him a target for every fly.
Oh, my God. That's horrible. Yep. Oh, my God. We're in the middle of the woods.
Yeah.
And you're dousing yourself with sugar water.
Yeah.
That's horrible. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if you noticed this because I didn't notice this. And I had to think back about it. I was like, you know, I think I did see a glove. A glove belonging to a Nightmare on Elm Street 1984 Freddy Krueger character can be seen hanging above the door of the tool shed when Ash carves his girlfriend's head with a chainsaw and when he's looking for the pages and later in the cellar. This was in response to the use of the Evil Dead 1981 on television screen in A Nightmare on Elm Street 1984.
I looked for that. I didn't see it, but I'm sure it's there because you're not the only person I heard that from.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
It's time now for Final Judgment. Are you ready to rubber stamp this bitch? Here's the Final Judgment.
All right, now it's opinions are over. Now it's time for cold hard facts. We need to decide whether or not this movie holds up. This does fit in, as has been illustrated to me previously, that it does fit within the gamut of the 1980 to 2000. So we're just going to go ahead and say whether or not it holds up. And Melanie, does the movie hold up? What do you think?
Okay, so I'm going to say, I don't know how to say, okay, I almost want to go 50-50 in a way because It obviously holds up because it's a huge cult classic and a huge cult following now, and they've made a ton of them since, and they're still literally as of right now, as of last year, making another one. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, I had just seen that. So, was it this year or last year that they made it? I think it was this year.
This year.
Yeah. So obviously it still holds up, but they wouldn't be able to do that. But I think at the same time, if somebody were to go back and watch this now that has never seen this particular film, mm-hmm. they need to know right away that it is a comedy.
Sure.
And they need to know that it's, you know, like they got to be in the mood for comedy first, then horror. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, maybe have a few drinks so they can laugh more, you know, with it. Yeah. So I think you have to be set up and be in the mood for this kind of movie. I think to watch it, I don't think it's going to appeal to everyone.
Mm-mm.
So with that being said, I don't know. I think it would take a certain crowd to want to go watch it and to appreciate it for what it's for.
Yeah.
So I don't think it would hold up to everybody. I think it would have to be a certain crowd. Yeah. And but now that they are remaking it, mm-hmm. they've been taking the comedy out and making it more horror.
Yeah.
So I think that's where it's going to now, in a different direction.
Okay.
So obviously it holds up in that way because they're still making them.
Yeah.
And it's a huge cult classic. So
okay.
I mean, you know, I guess I don't know how you'd say that, on the fence or whatever.
I'm not here to put words in your mouth. It sounds like you're leaning towards no. I think
I don't have to say, because it is and it isn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I know.
It has to be, or it wouldn't be a cult classic, and they wouldn't be able to make new ones now. But I think it would take a certain type of person to appreciate it. I don't think everybody would go in liking it, and they would have to know it was comedy first.
Sure. All right. I'm into that. I think it's tough for me to be unbiased about this because I just really dig it, and I think it's so clever, even though it's obviously low budget and like very niche.
Yeah.
I think it holds up.
That's exactly it.
Absolutely niche.
Yeah.
I think it holds up, and I think it holds up because A, the cult status.
Yeah.
You can, to me, this is almost like a Monty Python. Every generation that comes through high school knows almost, it's fading a little bit.
Yeah, everybody knows that.
But rediscovers Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
And I hope this does the same thing. It obviously has some hinky special effects in it, even though they did the best they could. But to me, that's the charm of it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it holds up just from a filmmaking standpoint. I think people they're trying to emulate movies that are keeping the audience, guessing. We don't know what's going to happen. I think that's the problem with Marvel movies, even though I do like them. I don't want to shade on them that much, even though they have lost their luster a tad. They're still entertaining. I don't mind watching them. But you kind of know there's no shock. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just cool. But you kind of know what's going to happen. And Evil Dead 2, if you're sitting down, you have to know, like, you don't know what you're in for right now.
Oh, not at all.
You know what I mean?
What's going to happen next. So you want to watch all of it because you want to figure out what they're going to do next. Yeah.
But I can absolutely understand why someone would not dig this movie. 100%. Like you didn't get, it's not like, oh, you didn't get it. Like, it's not that. It's just like, yeah, all right, I can totally see why, like, you weren't buying this, and that's okay. So we'll just send you back to your Hallmark movie and be on.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So, all right, folks. Well, that was our show, a J-List show. We'll see Jay next time. And I'd like to thank Steve Lavoie for our vocal imaging and Draco and the Malfoys for the introduction. I am co-host, main host, whatever you want to call it, Chris Martineau, on behalf of myself. I'm sorry, behalf of myself. Melanie, you can say goodbye. You want to say good evening? Why don't you say goodbye?
Okay, goodbye. Thank you so much for listening, and hope you like The Evil Dead 2.
Excellent, and we'll see you next time. And movies may not age like fine wine, but we certainly drink them anyway. Bye. Film Crickets, chirping about movies.